velocity of nature? No? We say the hard becomes soft, right? Huh? And there's an apparent contradiction there, right? Because if the hard becomes soft, and becomes means comes to be, well, if the hard comes to be soft, then the hard would be soft. And then the same thing would be hard and not hard, soft and not hard. Huh? So, how is it possible if the hard becomes soft? Yeah. It's not the hard as such it becomes soft. It's not hardness as such it becomes soft. It's what the hardness is in, like the butter, right, that becomes soft. Huh? So the butter as such becomes soft, not the hard as such becoming soft. Huh? So there must be a real distinction between the butter and its hardness before the butter can become soft. Huh? If the butter and its hardness were the same thing, could the butter ever be soft? No. So you begin to see that the thing that changes must be what? Composed, right? And so when I teach that, you know, in philosophy of nature, I'll say, now we can use this premise with the premise in theology that God is not composed, right? And so he syllogizes in the second figure of the syllogism, where you affirm something of one thing and deny it of another, right? So if what changes is composed, as we were showing there, and God is not composed, then God cannot change. Huh? Sometimes I was pushing it this year a little bit, the idea of becoming, and I say, and something becomes something, right? There must be something in what becomes something that's able to become that, right? But there must also be something that distinguishes it, right, from what comes to be, right? So if this becomes that, whatever this is, if this becomes that, there must be something in this that's able to be that, right? Okay?
Okay.
So this becomes that, right? There must be something in this that can be that, right? But there must also be something in this whereby this is not that. Right? Okay? So if this really becomes that, there will be coming, then this is not that to begin with, right? But there must be something also in this that becomes that, right? So there must be some composition in the this that becomes that, right? Composition of what is able to be that and what distinguishes it from that, right? There's another way of looking at it, but I mean, it's just the same idea, right? So what changes is always composed. God is not composed, therefore God does not what? Change, right? That's a very common way of reasoning, huh? When Socrates reasons against Simmias there in the dialogue, huh? When he reasons that the soul is not the harmony of the body, and he finds three things said of the soul that are denied of the harmony of the body. Like the soul resists the body's inclinations sometimes, right? But the harmony of the body would not resist the inclinations. So the soul can't be the harmony, right? That's a very common thing. If you affirm something of one thing and deny it of another, can those two be the same? If you affirm woman, let's say, a mother, and deny a woman of Socrates, can Socrates be a mother? No, no. That's what they call the second figure of the syllogism, huh? Okay. So what's the third argument here, huh? Third, because everything that moves by its motion acquires something, right? And comes to that to which before it had not attained, right? But God, since he is infinite, comprehending in himself all the what? Fullness or the perfection of the whole being, he's not able to acquire something, right? Nor to extend himself to something to which before he had not arrived. whence in no way does motion belong to him, right? Now stop there for a moment. You say, at Christmas time, you know, what do you give the guy who has everything? Well, if he really did have everything, there'd be nothing you could give him, right? Yeah. So God contains everything in a simple way, right? Like he says to Abraham or Moses, I will show you every good, right? And Thomas says, that is myself. So, because God is infinite, he can't, what? Change, right? Now, that kind of gives a little reason for taking up the infinity of God before his, what? Unchangeableness, right? Because you reason from his being infinite now to his being what? Yeah. And also taking up his simplicity, right? You realize, you reason from his simplicity to his not being changeable, right? And then more generally from his being pure act, huh? So you got three arguments, and three is enough, as Aristotle says, right? Thomas will do that a lot of times in the disputed questions too. He'll give three arguments and then he'll stop, you know. And Summa Gentius, he doesn't stop at three. Sometimes he has 10, 12, 13. Okay. That's why the Summa is more for beginners, right? You don't need that many. You know, three arguments is certainly enough for the beginner, right?